You are listening to the Cycling Podcast at the Giro d'Italia in association with Rafa. From grand tours to group rides, the Champs-Élysées to coffee stops, Rafa exists to celebrate the world's most beautiful sport. Today we are in Iseo.
Hello, my name is Richard Moore with Daniel Freeb.
Hello, Richard.
Buonasera. What's this we're drinking, Daniel?
Franciacorta. It's the wine stage, isn't it? Mm. I've been hearing a lot about wine. I can see you wincing already.
Not at all. I mean, you've obviously been tucking into this because you sent me up to get your glass because you felt you've already been up too many times.
No. The real reason was I was ensconced in conversation. Can you be ensconced in conversation? Anyway, I was deep in conversation with two chaps serving the Franciacorta earlier, picking their brains.
Excellent. And you're wearing a different outfit to the one you had on at the finish.
I've got my Nociro.
Retro. You got soaked at the finish because we had it was very localized downpour. We were watching the race. They were 2 kilometers away in sunshine, and there we were at the finish with the rain absolutely lashing down.
More importantly, Rich, what do you think of the wine?
It's lovely. Yeah, slightly sparkling.
It's a sparkling wine, you heathen. Lionel.
Mine's obviously been sitting out for a bit. It's only slightly sparkling now. Anyway, it's nice though. It's tasty, sharp.
Dear me,
tail of the tapa.
More delicate than champagne.
We've got a lot coming tonight. We've got spoken to a lot of people,
including someone about wine,
Brent Copeland, others about the 8-man teams here, the effect that's had on the race, both in terms of tactics and safety. And we've got, I'd say, three-quarter baked rumour about the Giro d'Italia starting in Wales in 2020. We'll expand on that later,
Sounds as though you've already dropped this bomb. On that.
I haven't, no.
Oh, right, okay.
What do you mean?
I don't know.
Hinted at it, Daniel. Tale of the Tapa. Riva del Garda to Iseo. Is that a correct pronunciation? Iseo. I said it wrong earlier then. That's annoying. I should have checked.
One of the Iseo is not a particularly well-known town internationally, but it's on the northern shore of a lake that's not particularly well-known internationally, one of the Italian lakes, the Lago di Iseo. We went past another very beautiful one, smaller and even less well-known, the Lago di Idro, earlier today.
I had to tell you what it was, didn't I? By looking at the map, obviously. Anyway, we started by Lake Garda, and it was very nice, very choked up there. But it was very hot in the start village. Lots of riders warming up on rollers, turbo trainers. Interestingly, Simon Yates did not, but most riders were warming up. It was quite a short stage, 155 kilometres. Although the official distance given at the end is 149.5. I think they extended the neutralised zone a little bit, oddly. Don't know why they did that. But it was quite a short stage, and it started with a bit of climbing, so there was a lot of nervousness. We detected some anxiety at the start.
And a very, very long tunnel, wasn't there?
Very long tunnel. Very, very long tunnel. We expected them to go in there and Fausto Coppi to emerge 3 minutes clear. It was that sort of tunnel.
It reminded me of a story from the 1998 Giro. The day after the infamous Gavia stage, the race went over the Passo del Rombo into Austria, and there was talk of a protest. Jean-François Bernard was very much involved in the attempt to get the race stopped. And so much so that I think I mentioned this before on the podcast, that at one point he rode in front of the peloton and stood horizontally across the road with his bike plonked on the tarmac as a barricade to stop anyone going any further. But at a certain point on the Passo del Rombo, the peloton went into a tunnel and there were mutineers that managed to escape the Jeff Bernard enforced blockade, and Jeff Bernard has some very choice words for the race organizer Vincenzo Toriani at the finish. Anyway, sorry, Richard.
None of that happened today. First attacker was Israel Cycling Academy's Chris Nalans, who you might remember from Milan San Remo. He attacked before Vincenzo Nibali attacked. Obviously stung by the question we had the other night from a listener about whether Israel Cycling Academy were still in the race. It's the first we've seen of them for a while. But there were a flurry of attacks after it. Luis Leon Sanchez was very prominent in all of them. A decent-looking move went clear with him, Salvatore Puccio, Visconti, Hugh Carthy, Matteo Cattaneo, and Francesco Gavazzi from Androni. Of course, Alessandro De Marchi was there as well. De Marchi, Sanchez, and several Sky Riders were all quite prominent all day. The Sky Riders obviously had the green light to attack today and try and win a stage. Sanchez wasn't happy with the group. He gave them the middle finger at one point. Felt it was too big and there wasn't enough cooperation. Another group formed, 14 this time, but behind Bora were working quite hard. They were quite keen to see if they could get rid of Elia Viviani to set things up for Sam Bennett. UAE were up there too, obviously atoning for their day of shame in the time trial. There were some crosswinds at one point, and Chris Froome, Rowan Dennis and Miguel Angel Lopez were caught behind briefly, and it looked quite exciting for a while. 22 emerged at the front. Lots of riders, including Marco Fraporte, another Androni rider who had a lot of local support today along the route, Daniel, didn't he? We passed several big Fraporte banners.
Yeah,
and
we also passed the factory of one of one of the Androni Giocattoli sub-sponsors, a company called Evas.
We probably pass one of them every day,
well,
do we
that's
not?
That's true.
Fraporte took the intermediate sprint, but on the only categorised climb of the day at Lodrino at 71 kilometres, an eight-man group went clear. That included King Kenny Elizonde, Wout Poels, Luis Leon Sanchez, of course, Giovanni Visconti, Ben Hermans from the Israel Cycling Academy, Alessandro De Marchi, Alexandra Geniez, who was quite highly placed overall, and Max Schachmann, the young German from Quickstep. It all got a bit hectic after that. Viviani and Dumoulin were off the back with mechanical problems briefly, and the survivors from that breakaway, Poels, De Marchi, Sanchez and Hermans, persisted. They had over a minute at one point, but with 20k to go, they had only seconds of survivors from that group. Lotto NL Jumbo were doing a lot of work to try and set up Danny Van Poppel. Brambilla had a go in the finishing circuit. So did Moritz Lammertink from Katusha Alpecin. But it was a bunch sprint. And Fabio Sabatini led it out. Elia Viviani on his wheel. Danny Van Poppel went very early to try and basically box in Viviani. But Viviani had enough time to come out, get around him, and win pretty easily. Sam Bennett was absolutely distraught at the finish.
So was Danny Van Poppel.
Was it? Did you see him?
Yeah, I guess. Well, that kind of reaction is inevitable when your team has worked most of the
day.
So hard to keep the race together in conditions and, well, circumstances in the race that weren't really conducive to keeping the race together.
Viviani, and you said this at the start, Daniel, because I think you spoke to people at Quickstep, but they were actually wanting a break to go away today and give themselves a bit of a day off before Rome, so it was a bonus. Really,
yeah, they
for
didn't really want to get into a bun fight today, and that's exactly what they got. Although, fortunately, the consolation for them was that they weren't one of the teams really ensuring that the peloton did come into Iseo together. But Richard, I spoke to Rick Van Slyke. Slyke, we call him Rick.
Do you want some pronunciation lessons there, Daniel?
Well, I don't speak Flemish,
no.
Richard.
It's the one little weak spot you have, and I'm going to exploit it.
Oh, okay. Anyway, I did speak to him at the finish about, well, a theme we're going to elaborate on shortly. The lack of successful breakaways in this Giro, and whether it's got anything to do with the fact that this is the first major tour for a long time where the teams have only had eight riders.
Well, we should wait what the situation was, and for sure we would not pull because we lost already two guys in the last gruppetto, so we were a little bit short in guys, so we just let the race go and waited what happened in the final, and then at the last 12-15 kilometers we decided that we might participate to the sprint, because if you're there and it's a group sprint, you have to do.
It was a crazy stressful day for everyone, Rick.
Yeah, but of course a lot of riders were recovered well from the rest day and the TT yesterday, so not even one break went to the finish, so everybody tried again. Of course, it was a little bit harder than normal because the steep climbs in the start. Two, three in a row was not easy for everybody, so it was very hard. And finally, nobody got away. Bora and a few other teams, they took control. The guys who were not in the break, they tried to close to get somebody in the break, and then it's a roller coaster. Everybody's chasing everybody, so was hard to get in a breakaway, and at the end, yeah, then in the last part it was quite flat, and then, you know, teams stuck together to have a sprint.
Rick, with eight-man teams, we thought more breaks would go to the finish in this Giro, and none have gone to the finish. Why is that?
Well, maybe the stages are too hard. Yeah, we don't know. It's strange. Normally, second week, breaks go to the finish, but maybe now, without less of people, you take more control, more intensive, and the break never takes 7-8 minutes. Everybody has his interests. If there are only two or three sprint stages, sprinters teams don't let them go. If the guys want to do GC in the climbs, they want to make difference or have to catch up time, they don't let them go. They want to take the boni, and they want to win the stage themselves. So that makes it a little bit strange that not one breakaway goes to the finish.
Chute à l'arrière du peloton. Cycling Podcast team car at the back of the pack, please.
Sponsoring today's episode from the Giro d'Italia is the Lisa Mattress. We've been sponsored by Lisa Mattresses before. Lionel, we're grabbing you just before you head home. What's one of the things you're looking forward to about going home?
Well, I've been on the Giro.
Set you up nicely there, didn't I?
You have. I've been on the Giro for 18 nights, and in that time I've slept on 17 different mattresses. So I can honestly say I'm looking forward to getting home to sleep on my own Lisa mattress and just get back into a kind of routine of a good night's sleep.
Watch the final stages of the Giro from your Lisa mattress.
No, I will get up. I will get out of bed this coming week. Don't worry.
Okay, the new way to buy a mattress is the Lisa mattress. It's available exclusively online and delivered direct to your door, compressed in a box. No more awkward, time-consuming bed shopping experiences. Lisa gives you 100 nights to try your mattress at home risk-free. If you're not sleeping better within 100 nights, Lisa will pick up your mattress to be donated or recycled and arrange a full refund for you. Giving back is an important part of Lisa brand. One mattress is donated to charity for every 10 that are sold. We've got an exclusive code for the listeners. Lionel, if you'd like to read that out.
Yes, we have got a code. You can receive £80 off a Lisa mattress with the code CYCLING. Go to lisa.co.uk, that's LEESA.co.uk, and enter the code CYCLING to receive £80 off your purchase.
I'm in La Gazzetta dello Sport since 85. This is my 31 Giro d'Italia, and I love cycling and I love good wine. And so 6 years ago, I became a sommelier. And so I think that cycling and wine are on the same road. Prosecco, there are 500 million bottle of Prosecco, 500 milioni di bottiglie, and just 25 million Franciacorta. But it's different wine, because Franciacorta is like champagne. So it's method classico, is the method champenoise. For sure, Franciacorta is one of the best sparkling wine in the world. Prosecco is fermented in its big bottle for 2-3 months. And Franciacorta, like Trento DOC, like champagne, remain in bottle for minimum 15-18 months, and sometimes also for 10 years. And so it's very difficult, different method. Normally, is the best way to have the good sparkling wine. If you want to have a bottle of wine on your table, you can take a Prosecco. It's good wine, a happy wine, sparkling wine, and it doesn't cost too much. Franciacorta, Trento DOC, or champagne cost much more, and sometimes Prosecco is a good way to begin to understand wine, and then you pass to a Franciacorta or champagne.
So there you go again, Rich. Every day is a school day.
Every day is a school day.
Despite your stubborn resistance, total unwillingness to absorb any of these fantastic gastronomic treats that we're experiencing.
I absorb them.
Well, you
right.
do absorb them, in a certain fashion every day. But Pierre Bergonti there, really talking about the why Prosecco has been such a huge success story, in certainly in the UK and in other markets. And Franciacorta remains a bit of a, well, it's a very well-kept secret, but a superior wine, I would suggest. Different wine, but a superior wine.
A community around the world. Stories and films with the most compelling characters. The world's finest apparel. Explore the world of cycling with Rafa.
Thank you very much indeed to our main sponsor, Rafa, who, among other things, produce our wonderful Pedaleur de Charme and Pedaleuse de Charme T-shirts. It's time again to award one of these for the third week of the Giro. It's a little bit early this week because we want to be sure that we can get these to the winning rider before the Giro finishes. So we've done the poll. Some of you nominated riders, and then the nominees were Luis Leon Sanchez, who wasn't, I have to say, very charming at the finish. When I tried to speak to him, he gave me a... He didn't want to speak. He wasn't very happy. Rowan Dennis nudged him in the backside in a sort of jovial fashion, and he wasn't very impressed by that either. So he wasn't in a great mood, having tried all day to get clear and win the stage. But he is in our shortlist for Pedaleur de Charme. George Bennett is there as well, the New Zealander. Gianni Savio is there. Now, he's not a rider, but he a bit of a curveball there. He was nominated, and I feel like he belongs on a Pedaleur de Charme poll. He will be featuring in our final Kilometre Zero, won't he, on Friday?
He will. I can't see Gianni Savio wearing a Pedaleur de Charme t-shirt. He always wears an undershirt.
He does always wear it. Often a black one.
Often a black one. So yeah. I'm not sure Pedaleur de Charme
t-shirt. It's an odd look, get, that, isn't it?
Yeah, I'm not sure Pedaleur de Charme t-shirt will get too much use by Gianni Savio. I think...
He's not going to turn it down, is he?
No, probably not. But I think a more appropriate accessory for Gianni Savio would be a crown of some sort. In Principe, of course, they call him the prince.
And the final, we'll find out the why final rider on the shortlist is Giulio Ciccone, who has been... very active throughout the race and has been nominated other weeks as well. He finally makes it onto the shortlist. In the early voting, George Bennett is leading. So, but Ciccone is actually getting quite a few votes, as is Savio. Luis Leon Sanchez lagging behind. The T-shirt, we will actually be awarding an overall Pedaleur de Charme for the Giro this year. The shortlist for that will be coming out tomorrow, so send your nominations in for an overall Pedaleur de Charme. And the final two T-shirts that we award will... be sort of ironed. We obviously were pulled up on that by a few people, and I got a message from Ian from Rafa. Ian's on holiday, but he's obviously listening in, and he gave me a few tips about how to make it look ironed, at least, even if we can't iron it. We've got a lot of nominations always for Simon Yates. He might feature in the overall list, as might Ben O'Connor and Giuseppe Fonzi, who's bringing up the rear.
But getting
again.
A lot less attention. Less this attention. Year. Yeah. The novelty's worn off. Fonzi, of course. Has. Thanks to the play on words, or the play on words, not really. His name just sounds like Fonzi.
Is Fonzi.
Well, yeah. Of Happy Days fame, the Fonzarelli. And last year, of course, he was turning up to the starts in leather jackets. And
he was greeted by his dog tonight in Dizio. Yeah, a very, very warm greeting. So, Daniel, at the start today, we spoke to a few people, didn't we, about the eight-man teams that we're seeing at this year's Giro. One thing we've talked about is there have been fewer crashes in the race. One theory for that is that the race started in Israel on quite wide roads, and it's those first couple of stages that are quite nervy and anxious, and maybe the race was able to settle into a rhythm before they came back to Italy, to the more dangerous Sicily roads. But there haven't been that many crashes, and safety was one factor that they talked about when they brought the teams down from 9 to 8 riders. But tactically, too, has it made any difference? We spoke to a few people this morning, one of whom was Markel Irizar, the Trek Segafredo rider.
I was expecting that more breakaways they would arrive, but apparently that's what I mean. Of course, the race is safer, but the race is less controlled and like this, the result is show that it's not doing well, you know, or not doing well. That more or less is the same, because till now, no one single breakaway has arrived.
Does it feel safer?
Yeah, or maybe because it's the Giro also, but okay, when you have 30 riders less or 20 something riders less, of course the bunch is a little bit smaller, and also the roads here are a little bit wider than the Tour, so yeah, that makes the difference.
So that was Markel Irizar, the Trek Segafredo veteran, who's been in a number of breaks himself, and he expressed some surprise that breakaways haven't been going away with teams having one less rider to control things.
Yeah, well, we heard from Rick Van Slyker, Slick, in the first part of the show, didn't we, who said that, you know, one feature as well of the breaks that have gone away is that they haven't ever had huge advantages, and maybe because the teams are aware that their resources are limited by this new rule, they don't let the break go out so far. And what does that mean? Their timings and their sort of instincts are all calibrated to ride at a certain pace to bring breaks back. But if they're not letting the break go so far, then maybe they're bringing the breaks back maybe more quickly than they want to in some cases. They've been bringing the breaks back fairly early, haven't they? We've not seen that many that have gone very close to the line either.
No. I mean, the only breakaway survivor to win a stage is Esteban Chavez, and that was a slightly different scenario. But another factor has perhaps been the time bonuses, because, you know, clearly Mitchelton Scott and Simon Yates have targeted those, and it's, they've been trying to bring things back in order for him to go for the time bonuses, which has been a very successful strategy.
But Rich, it does remain slightly paradoxical, slightly bemusing, in the sense that there aren't too many teams here with frontline sprinters, and therefore you would think their best option, by far their best option, would be a breakaway. What we've seen slightly more of, probably because the breaks have been coming back, is people trying to sort of counterattack in the last 10 or 15 kilometres, but they've not been successful either. And I suppose that's, well, certainly today that was a testament to Bora and Lotto NL Jumbo. They did a fantastic marking job. People like Cesare Benedetti of Bora were very, very quick to jump across when they were faced with the threat of someone upsetting the apple cart and going away in the last 10 or 15 kilometres.
Well, let's hear from a few team managers. I spoke to Brent Copeland of Bahrain Merida. I also spoke to Marco Pinotti, coach with Team BMC, and you spoke to Eusebio Unzie, the main man at Movistar. We'll hear first from Pinotti, then from Unzie, and then finally from Brent Copeland.
We still don't have the answer to this, because, you know, we have to see at the end of the season to analyze. I think in the team we use resources more wisely. And right now we have lost two men. We have only six, so only five people around the leader, and it reduces a little bit the option that the team has. And maybe it's a coincidence there are no breakaway that have arrived at the finish yet. So, because either there is more control or everybody has less option to send people their way. One thing that also it's good to see, if the number of crashes or the safety has increased. Other races, it seemed like in the class, it didn't affect much the number of crashes. Here in the Giro, maybe a little, but I think people need to sit down and look really at the statistics. Yeah.
It's an interesting point, though, because somebody like DeMarche would be somebody who might go in breakaways, but you might need him to help Rohan.
Yeah, I mean, in our case, it's one rider that when he doesn't go in the break, is the last man able to stay with him. But he's also here to, you know, as a personal goal of trying to win a stage. And he's been, some days he's been spending a lot of energy in the beginning. So, yeah, we have limited resources a little bit, yeah. We have basically 15% less resources at the start. But it's the same for everyone. And I think at the end of the year, it's good to have an analysis of what is the situation. And if you keep going forward, and also listen to all the stakeholder to see what... Yeah, if it's a good experiment to bring on or to go backward.
I don't know how to quantify it, but it's certainly weakened all of us. Every team here is weaker. We're weaker when it comes to attacking, and we're weaker when it comes to defending. Is it a better spectacle? Well, I never thought it had any link with that anyway. I think the decision was made mainly with a view to nullifying the strength of certain teams, which to me seems like a mistake. That's my general view. But if we're looking strictly at what's happening here in Italy, I think what it's done is give rise to a kind of compromise across all of the teams, meaning that everyone's helping with the work. They're either in a break or helping to bring the break back. So people talk about the spectacle, but not one break has been allowed to go to the finish in this Giro. We can say that it spread the sense of responsibility across the whole peloton, at least at the Giro.
I think this week could bring up a lot of surprises. You know, as soon as people start to think that the Giro is over, that's the time where you've got to actually concentrate a little bit more, especially with these next 3 days that are coming up. Not so much today, but Thursday, Friday, Saturday are huge stages. The Friday stage up to Bardonecchia is a stage we've always said is the hardest stage of this Giro. And it's the first time that we start to go over 2,000 meters, so could be some surprises with some reactions of riders of how they react over 2,000 meters. And then you got Chris that seems to be coming better and better, and he's got a strong team. We saw yesterday four of the Sky riders were, I think, within 2 minutes of Dennis. So that means their condition of the whole team's good, and this, frankly speaking, scares us a bit, because with podium is what we're racing for. So we've got to be careful that they don't put the tack on too early, or that they don't let the brakes get away. Because if the brakes are not let to go, then there's the bonus seconds at the finish, and that's what we've got to be careful of.
I guess the precedent is 2 years ago. He wasn't your rider at the time, but Nibali had a deficit of over 4 minutes on Kruiswijk, and the Giro turned. Why does that happen maybe in the Giro more than in the Tour de France, say?
I think that's what makes the Giro special in its own right. It's a race where the riders aren't scared to do something different. The Tour is very calculated. On paper, it's a little bit easier to read. Whereas the Giro, you've got riders that will attack in the beginning, at the end, and they'll do things that they wouldn't think of doing at the Tour, and that definitely makes it different, makes it more exciting at times. And like you say, the year with Vincenzo, when he won from such a far way out, it made it exciting. I honestly don't see that happening this year. I think Mitchelton Scott's really strong team, so they're going to keep it under control. They're going to make sure that's not going to happen, and Simon's really riding so well at the moment, so yeah, I don't think that's going to happen. But like I say, it's three hard days that we've got to be careful of, everyone's going to be careful of.
I mentioned the eight-man teams. Do you think that has been a factor in the racing so far, or might be a factor this week?
Absolutely. Unfortunately, in our case, it's seven riders. We started off without Sutso, and we've definitely felt that in the mountains. You know, Sutso was our climber for Pozzo Vivo. He had great condition. He won the Tour of Croatia before coming here, so we knew he was the perfect rider to cover that role. And unfortunately, we're sitting here with three big mountain stages coming up without Sutso. So we've ridden seven riders, and it definitely changes the tactics. It definitely changes the way you select the team before the Grand Tours, whether you put in a time trialist type rider or a climber. So we have felt it being a different. As far as safety is concerned, I don't know how much it changes. Speaking to the riders, it's 50-50. Some of them say they felt it in the bunch. It's easier to move up, some of them say. Others say it doesn't really make a difference because the road's only so wide, and you still got 30-40 riders trying to be on the front when you get to a climb. So that I can't really judge on. I still haven't made up my mind on that, but for tactics-wise, definitely makes a difference.
The Cycling Podcast is supported by Science in Sport. Independent research shows 10% of sports nutrition products could get a professional rider banned. Trust Science in Sport, the world's highest standard of banned substance testing.
Thank you to Science and Sport for sponsoring us and allowing us to be here at the Giro. A reminder, you can get 25% off at scienceandsport.com with the code SISCP25. SISCP25. We'll try to play another listener's question in tomorrow night's episode. We heard there Daniel from Marco Pinotti, Eusebio Unzue, and Brent Copeland. And Brent spoke a bit about how the race might also unfold over the next few days, and made the point that Friday's stage is the toughest of the entire Giro, and we could see things change quite dramatically. And he's very nervous about Chris Froome and Team Sky and their threat to Domenico Pozzovivo's podium ambitions.
Well, just going back to the issue of the eight-man teams, Rich, one thing that was also said, well, it was mentioned there, but also by other team managers more kind of informally that we've spoken to over the last few days, the riders, the domestiques in particular, having to do more work. So they're, you know, typically if someone was given the responsibility of pulling in the first 100 kilometres, now it's 130 kilometres because obviously the workload is spread, it's not spread as thinly across a few riders. I've been attacked by a fly. And another issue is that there are certain riders who have been, who are kind of chronically long listed for major tours, and they're always in the shake up, but they're always right on the bubble of, and sort of fighting out at the last minute to get selected. And they, in a lot of cases, have missed out and are going to miss out this year. And if guys think they're going to do a grand tour and then they don't get picked and they're told the week before, then in a lot of cases, and if you look at the calendar over the next few weeks and months, those guys are probably not going to get an awful lot of racing, or not going to get a lot of the type of racing that they want to do, i.e. stage races and long stage races. You know, you think of someone like Philip Dagenham at Sky, who was definitely in the shake-up for the Giro. And, and there is no real good alternative. And then when someone like that, I don't know what Philip Dagenham's contract situation is, but when someone like that is in the last year of their contract, then all of a sudden it becomes quite tricky for them.
Yeah, someone like Roger Kluger as well. I spoke to Matt White a while ago about him. He's a very good lead-out man for Caleb Ewan, but he's not somebody who's going to be much use in other harder stages, and there's, you know, his climbing is not the best, so it would be a risk to take him. He'd be very useful for Caleb Ewan on the flat stages, but might struggle to do other jobs that guys are going to need to do. So yeah, there's a difficulty for guys who are big, kind of strong riders, yeah, who struggle to get over climbs.
On the other hand, I suppose it is to the advantage of very versatile guys,
yes,
sort of Swiss Army knife type riders who can do a lot, and also the reliability is really at a premium now, isn't it? That the sort of capricious, kind of inconsistent riders who will produce one brilliant day and one indifferent one, are not going to be, well, maybe as popular.
It's also as we spoke about earlier in the year in the podcast, after speaking to James Shaw, it's not good for young riders as well who are going to struggle to get a chance in a Grand Tour, because they're untested. And this may be a factor when, you know, Team Sky pick their team and whether they take Egan Bernal, who is so young and untested over 3 weeks.
And another thing we didn't hear there from Eusebio Unzué, but something he said to me just on the safety issue, as far as he's concerned, as long as the number of teams is the same, then the danger level is the same, because if you've got 21 teams, it doesn't matter if there are 5, 6, 7, or 8 riders in each of those teams, they've all got a leader that they're trying to keep at the front. I mean, that is the most dangerous thing in professional cycling at the moment, when everyone is fighting for position. I mean, the peloton did incredibly well today not to come down, or not to be any major crashes at any point. Particularly, I suppose they only got rain for the last couple of kilometres, didn't they? But it was very stressful. It looked very stressful, very hectic.
You can see the riders as they came across the line. A lot of them looked like they'd had a hard day. Also, it was interesting what Pinotti said this morning about Alessandro De Marche, who is obviously here to try and win a stage, but he's also the strongest teammate that Rohan Dennis has, and Rohan Dennis is 6th overall. Obviously, he was given the green light today to have a go, but over the next few days, I imagine he'll not be straying too far from Rohan Dennis's side. Now, Daniel, I mentioned earlier this news, if we can call it that, in inverted commas. Hear very strong rumours that the Giro will start in Wales in 2020.
Dun, dun, dun.
Becky, my voice, and we're in the press room. Anybody could be listening in. I understand that Scotland were also in the frame, but they stepped back. It was going to be Paisley, apparently, of all places.
Pink
the
Paisley.
Paisley,
kilt.
The town just to the
you
west of
Maravegna
Glasgow.
Can you imagine in a kilt? I actually can.
Yeah, definitely. Gianni Savio in a kilt. Okay. Eh?
Yeah.
That would look good. But unfortunately, Scotland set back when Wales bid appeared to be more serious. So the Giro, yeah, strongly rumoured to be going to Wales in 2020, around Cardiff, we expect, with a stage up through Wales into North Wales. Just got a knowing look from somebody there who may or may not know, I don't know. Anyway, there we are. Excited. I mean, Daniel, you're overwhelmed with excitement about
yeah.
this, aren't you?
We were talking.
Don't alienate my
Welsh fans. We were talking in the car about, weren't we, today, about how far this trend can go, and you know what is the next frontier? Who's gonna dare to go even further?
For example, Israel.
I had one interesting idea. I can't remember your interesting idea. My interesting idea was, instead of having a grande partenza, when will the time come for the Giro to have a grande finale or grande arrivo? And that would be a grand finish. So, yeah. And I can imagine that, you know, the Giro, it's been to Israel, it's been to various other far-flung destinations. There's been talk of New York and, you know, knowing the big Italian community in Brooklyn and New York. How about one day the Giro, in a sort of symbolic nod to Italian emigration, ends in New York or Brooklyn? And they cash two big checks, one for the Grande Partenza from someone and one for the Grande Arriva from someone else. And you rightly pointed out, Rich, that would pose fewer problems
for the riders
because they wouldn't have three more weeks of racing to
recover
tackle
from that long journey. So you fly to New York on the Wednesday or Thursday, and then you have three stages, an easy road stage, a time trial, and then another road stage. Boom. There we go. Maraveni, if you're listening, you can have that one. Finally, before we go tonight, do you have anything else to say, Daniel? You're looking at me like...
No, I'm just waiting to see whether you've remembered what's coming next.
What's coming next?
What is coming next?
What is
We've
coming
got,
next?
I went off on a bit of a secret mission, didn't
oh,
I?
Oh, yeah. Oh, sorry.
Yeah, I thought you might have forgotten.
I did forget, yeah.
Go on. Well, we're in Iseo, and I remembered that...
Iseo.
No, Iseo. I remembered that 3 or 4 years ago, I interviewed a rider called Mattia Gavazzi, who was once one of the most promising sprinters on the Italian scene. He had a lot of problems in the sense that he had it sounds slightly glib to call it a bad habit of testing positive for cocaine, but he did test positive 4 times for cocaine in his career, and that unfortunately brought an end to his career in 2016 because he was banned for life after those 4 positive tests. But it was a sad story because it really was a story of addiction, and this was a rider who, as I said, was touted as one of the best sprinters in Italy, and won quite a lot of minor races like the Giro di Toscana. He'd ridden for teams like Gianni Savio's team, and was, while he was sort of staying on the straight and narrow, he was someone who was being looked at by big teams and could conceivably have moved up. However, as I said, Rich, I spoke to him in one of his better periods at the Giro. He was riding for Gianni Savio. He then had another relapse and, as I said, in 2016 had to end his career after the 4th positive test. Anyway, he was at the finish. He's from Iseo. And I was keen to see how he was getting on.
Fortunatamente, comunque, ho trovato il modo di inserirmi nel mondo del lavoro perché insomma.
Fortunately, I've been able to find a job because that's not easy nowadays. I've got a building company with my brother Nicola. I've also found a kind of balance away from cycling. I'm doing quite well. I've almost become a normal person again. When we spoke in Bardonecchia, I'd gone through a rehab program helped by people who knew what they were doing. But I myself probably didn't have total faith in it. I'd got back into cycling, and as soon as I started winning again and feeling strong, it turned out that I wasn't that at all, and I relapsed into the substance that's messed with my life for many years. Unfortunately, I think that someone who's had experiences that I've had with certain substances is going to be fighting it for the rest of their life. You carry it around with you, and it's very difficult to free yourself. For me, at least, my relationships are very important. Since I've been with this person who's stuck by me, I've felt serene and I can steer clear of lots of other things which were previously irresistible to me. Unfortunately, history has taught me that relapses are going to happen, but I can't live with that fear. I have to live my life as Mattia Gavazzi, and whatever will be, will be.
Però sai, non è che uno può vivere con la paura di io adesso sono Mattia Gavazzi, faccio il mio lavoro, sono sereno e basta, la vivo così, punto. quello che sarà sarà, nel senso che.
So yeah, Rich, that was Mattia Gavazzi. As we've discussed before, we're not unfamiliar with stories of professional cyclists struggling with recreational drugs. At times, it seemed as though doping has been some kind of gateway to recreational drug use. In this case, I don't think that's what actually happened. In fact, Mattia, I remember him explaining to me how he'd sort of started with cannabis when he was about 16, and that had led to other drugs and eventually cocaine. And yeah, it's a fight that he's obviously still, well, he's still very much engaged in. And as he said there, it's a fight that's probably going to last the rest of his life, unfortunately. But he was looking pretty well, and it was good to see him here. He was actually, he told me he had mixed feelings today because Viviani had won the stage, and that burned slightly in the sense that Mattia felt that he was a more gifted young rider than Viviani, almost of Viviani's generation. But no, he was here just as a spectator today.
Well, finally, we released our penultimate Kilometre Zero this morning, and it was look at Simon Yates through the eyes of people who've known him for a while. Had an interview in there with Frances Newstead, his first coach, when he was 14, 15 with the British talent team. He mentioned her, actually, in an interview Lionel did with him a couple of years ago as being a very good influence on him and his career. So spoke to her. That was really interesting. Matt White had some good tales, and Rod Ellingworth as well is in there. Let's hear a little clip from it now. Who is Simon Yates? He's 25, he's from Bury in Lancashire, and he is known, of course, as the Flying Black Pudding.
I remember him very well. I mean, I knew the family well, lovely family, and lovely boys, both him and Adam. Super, really solid boys, kind, very quiet, very competitive on the bikes, but off the bikes there was never any ego. Always a good lad to have around.
When Simon won that World's Points race, he thought, blimmin' hell, for a little guy, he was like first year under 23, I think. We knew then he'd got something, and I think that's what sets him apart from most of the GC. He's got that top end.
They shared an apartment together in Drona, and it was the end of the season, and Simon asked Adam, he said, oh, you don't mind if a girlfriend of mine comes and stays at the end of the season? And Adam said, girlfriend? You never tell me he had a girlfriend. And she had the girlfriend. He had a girlfriend for 3 or 4 months, and he didn't even know. So, like I said, sometimes they're in contact with each other every day. What are they talking about? I don't know. But yeah, Probably bikes, more than personal things. But there's some funny stories there.
So that's our latest Kilometre Zero, available to friends of the podcast. Sign up as a friend at thecyclingpodcast.com. You'll get all our Kilometre Zeros there, as well as our many special episodes that we've released. We've released quite a lot this year, and more to come. That's all for us from Izio. We've got a long drive.
Izio.
That's all for us from Izio. We've got a long drive
now. Not too late in the Giro to start a regular feature of Richard Learns Italian.
Oh, no. Just before we go, tomorrow's another big day, isn't it, Danny? What's happening tomorrow?
Well, it is. So we finished to Prato Nevoso. We're going into Piemonte, home of Gianni Savio, home region of Gianni Savio. And it's not a particularly difficult climb. It's the gradient most of the way up is sort of 6-8%. We think it's going to be great for Tom Dumoulin, a big chance for him, I think. This kind of stage, if you look at the profile, there's no comparison between this and the stages to come, which look much, much harder. However, we've seen in the past, you know, even going back to the stage to Verbier in the 2009 Tour de France, they often cause quite a lot of damage. And the very similar stage to Europa last year, won by Tom Dumoulin, caused a lot of damage. And I think we might see some surprises tomorrow. Do you know who won at Prato Nevoso once? You saw him today.
I saw him today.
Not Claudio Chiappucci, who we saw in the press room about half an hour ago. It was
Lord Tonkov.
Oh.
Fratelli.
Yes, I'm here. I don't know why, but I'm here. Listeners.
Where did you come from?
Actually, from the press room. I'm looking for some stuff because I'm losing my pieces, dear listening. This always happens to me in the third week. I'm not finding my notebook, also my laptop. I don't know where it is.
Your marbles.
Yes, exactly.
Ciro, what's going to happen tomorrow?
About the race, you mean, Daniel?
Yes.
I mean, these questions, as usual, are the most difficult question for me, dear listeners, because, as usual, I'm not really concentrated on this, but I think that so far, well, Yates has control of the race. I don't see him losing the jersey. My opinion, he can control.
There we go.
That's it? Who's going to win the stage?
You didn't answer the question. Who was it?
It wasn't Tonkov.
Of course it was Tonkov.
Okay, Tonkov.
Tonkov, he was here also,
yeah,
but he's no longer.
Yeah, he also won in 96, I think.
And he won the Giro in the same year,
yes.
I guess. And also, if I'm not wrong, Garzelli in 2000 won in Prato Nevoso and won the Giro. So this is an important coincidence or not?
I tell you, who won't win tomorrow, but who's won at Prato Nevoso? Simon Gerrans.
And I remember that stage very well. I went over the Agnello, didn't it?
Yeah, but that was the Tour de France.
That was also the day we broke down, Daniel. We ran out of petrol.
Cheers,
and
gone.
It was also the day the Italian fans accused... He's off.
Cheers, ran out of petrol and he's off.
The day the Italian fans accused the publicity caravan of being assassins for not giving them cheap hats and sweets.
I remember it well.
Anyway, let's convene tomorrow. Bye.
Bye, bye, bye. Cicora,
se lo mangiano le femmine. A community around the world. Stories and films with the most compelling characters. The world's finest apparel. Explore the world of cycling with Rafa. Ci gira nella tenevo giardina della